You are Locked On Grizzlies, your daily Memphis Grizzlies podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back to the show. Another great guest for you guys today, a recurring guest, Peter Edmondson of The Athletic. What's going on, man?
Woo! Love to get back on the mothership. How are you, Mark?
I'm good, man. Summer League is officially over. It's entering the dog days of summer, but we still have to find something to talk about. And you had a fantastic article over at The Athletic. Again, if you have not already subscribed over there, I think it's like $9 a month. I don't even know. I don't notice it come out of my bank account. Let's put it like that. So make sure you go subscribe.
We got some good deals going on right now. We've added all of you college football fans. You know, the season's starting to come roll around. There's a ton of good college football folks like Andy Staples joined, and several beat writers covering like SEC teams and all that stuff. So there's a special 40% off promotion that goes along with that. So if you search for that, it's pretty easy to hit up. And I think that drops it down to like $2.99 a month, something like that. Yeah. My dog is excited about it. You can hear the excitement that my dog has about that.
It's super easy.
So anyway, it's super easy. So go and check it out. And it's well worth it. And you get the whole site. Like I said, you don't have to just like say, oh, I want the college football stuff, or I want the Grizzly stuff, or whatever. No, you get the whole thing, including podcasts and video and stuff. So it's good.
And your latest piece is on Brandon Clark. He had a fantastic summer league. I was going to do a whole show on this, and then I saw this piece come out, read it, and I was like, you know what? Peter is way smarter than me. I'd rather just have him on and let's talk about it with him. So,
I don't know about that, but thank you.
Let's do that today. Let's start with just overall view. What stood out most to you through his summer league with the Grizzlies, just in general?
Well, I mean, I think, as I kind of broke it down in the piece, Mark, and I appreciate the kind words, he's the thing that it comes down to kind of stuff that you expected to see and stuff that you didn't necessarily expect to see. And the biggest surprise, the thing that stood out to me the most, was the stuff that I didn't expect to see, which is, you know, being able to shoot a three at what appears to be a reasonable ability. You know, it's You can't go crazy projecting off summer league, no matter what it looks like. But the fact that he hit five threes in summer league and only hit four in his entire year in Gonzaga, the fact that he basically had the same level of pick and pop that he did throughout an entire collegiate season, playing not a ton of minutes. I think it was about 135 or something like that minutes in total. And he almost matched his entire collegiate output just as a pop guy, whether he made the shot or not, just the number of times that he actually popped out. That surprised me, because that shows me, from a development standpoint, the Grizzlies kind of see that as an area of potential growth, and probably early growth. And if that is true, and he was pretty effective in those situations, if that's true, Mark, then he could be a much better player earlier on than even folks like me, who were really high on him, thought. Now we'll obviously have to wait and see how that translates to the pros. But if you're asking what was the biggest surprise, or what kind of stood out in that regard, that's probably what it was for me.
I said this on my show, and I think you're probably right, and it holds true, that if he can expand his game into that range and being able to successfully pop out a little further, I mean, it really changes the net dynamic of what he's able to do. Especially not alone, not just by himself, but what he's able to do on the court with Jared Jackson. It really changes the way they're able to play him. As far as his defense, I mean, that's something that I was very impressed with. But what kind of skill do you think will translate the easiest to the NBA? And just as far as going from college to the NBA for him, what is going to translate the easiest for him at the next level?
Well, I think the easiest transition, you saw it in like huge amounts in summer league, is just defensive positioning and defensive awareness, IQ, stuff like that, being in the right place, being able to pick up concepts defensively, switching, whatever needs to be done. And I think the jury is still somewhat out on how Taylor Jenkins will approach his overall defensive philosophy, but you can see, I mean, the guy is just extremely smart. So that translates right out of the gate. It's a lot like Jaren Jackson last year, where, not to say that Jaren was going to hit eight threes every game like he did in the first game against Utah back last summer, But it's like, oh, wait a second. Like, hang on, this is maybe something that we didn't necessarily expect. And lo and behold, turns out that he could hit that at the professional level. So you could just see, you know, defensively, Jaren was ahead of the game. He was, you know, positioning guys. He was talking, all those things. You're seeing a lot of that same stuff with Brandon Clark. And I mean, not to be sacrilegious, but I think you're seeing it at even a higher level from an intelligence perspective. Now, athletically, Clark is off the charts, but he's not, you know, long. And we've discussed that, and that's mentioned in the piece as well. It's one of the reasons why the Grizzlies were able to draft him. So Jaren's got him there. Jaren's got massive wingspan, massive versatility, you know, unbelievable. So Jaren's got him there. But I think Clark may even be ahead of the game with regard to Jaren when it comes to hitting the right spot. I mean, you could see so many times when he would defend guys, he just knew where to be and could get his body there so quickly that it really negated a lot of that negative length stuff because he was just perfectly positioned. Like, he's jumping up to block shots before guys even know they're going to shoot. And they are going to shoot. He knows they're going to shoot. So, like, you know, stuff like that, that translates. Smart, like, high IQ stuff, as long as you've got the athleticism to back it up, which he obviously does, and then some, that stuff translates really quick.
Yeah, I something, you know, the defensive footwork is something that really impressed me, and his IQ. Just like you mentioned, just being able to know where to be, that covers up for a lot, especially in the NBA. That's like the starting point. You can go up from there.
Here's the thing, like Mark. Well, I was gonna say, here's the thing, like, for people, think about this, like, you know, Marc Gasol was and still is not to the degree that he was, but a spectacular defensive player, particularly as a team member. Now, right. Mark is obviously bigger, but Mark is probably the least athletic dude that was part of his team for a long time. I mean, yeah. Other than, you know, Zebo's jumping about, you know, 5 inches, Mark might jump like six. I mean, you're not talking about guys that are going to jump. But why was he a good defensive player? Because he understood what the other team was trying to do, and he put himself in position quickly. He anticipated things. He anticipated moves. He was able to help his teammates to anticipate those same moves. That's what Clark does, except that he provides a tremendous amount of athletic ability on top of it. You know, the negative is obviously just the size. They'll work on, you know, to some extent, the weight. Can't do much about the length, but he makes up for it, man. And I love watching players like that. He's just a really sharp dude.
Yeah, and I really don't, and the way he's played in summer league, and I really don't know if the wingspan thing is going to be that much of an issue. Again, like you just mentioned, if you're smart enough, it doesn't really matter. And if you're that smart and you know where the plays are going, and there's a bunch of great clips on that article just like demonstrating how he's able to do things and really cover different positions in different areas all at once. You start there and then you add the athleticism in, then you really kind of all really kind of go up. You mentioned Jaren. Do you think he plays the four or five with Jaren? Do you think it matters if they play together, where they're who's playing the quote unquote center position or power forward?
Nah, I mean, I think the thing that negates that to some extent, Mark, is that they are able to defend multiple positions. So, you know, the issues with Clark, where his length is going to be a problem potentially is dealing with extremely long post players. Because, you know, Clark is not necessarily the physically strongest dude yet. You know, he's still 210, 215, somewhere in that neighborhood. You know, so he's not going to necessarily be able to defend physically on the post. And then if there are guys that are skilled and have longer arms, you know, he struggles there. One of the areas that I didn't really get to, I had some clips that I just didn't want to overload the article. But, you know, he does, like, he can get boxed out. You know, he can get physically kind of pushed around a little bit by longer guys right now. So that's an area he's going to have to, you know, there's nothing you can do about that. That happened in college too. You know, there's going to be some matchups that are going to be a little more problematic for him. That might dictate that he plays a four or a five in certain situations, but you know, he can defend a three. There are a lot of threes out there that I think he can defend because he's quick enough to do it. And he's versatile enough to do it. So does the designation matter? Where does the designation matter, Mark? I mean, like, I don't know enough about Taylor Jenkins, you know, from an offensive X's and O's standpoint yet to be able to say that there's absolutely a stone cold designation between the four and the five or the three and the four to the point where, like, you have to play this and not that. I don't know that yet. I don't think any of us do. But to me, it's more about you are kind of who you can defend. That, right. I had a scout tell me that one time, and I think that's a good phrase in the NBA. You are who you can defend. And so he can defend fours and fives most of the time. There would be a few matchups he probably can't handle, but for the most part, I would say he can defend those. And, you know, I think Jaren, I don't know how much his appetite is there for the five yet. I think he's got to get stronger. I think he kind of seems to dictate and show a little Anthony Davis stuff where he kind of prefers. So that may be an issue too. We'll have to kind of wait and see how much Brandon Clark can handle defending fives. But I'd like to see it. And the good thing about this year, Mark, is, and I think Grizzly fans are, I don't know about your experience and stuff, but we've had great numbers. Grizzly fans have been really excited, surprisingly, about what's going on. And knowing that they're going to lose a bunch of games, I think people are going to have a kind of a rude awakening about how many games they're going to lose. But this is a year where you can do some experimentation. So you can play Brandon Clark as a five and see how it goes. You can play Brandon Clark even as a three, play with Jaren and Jonas. Just see what happens. I mean, you're going to lose a game. So what? You're going to lose lots of games. I mean, just try some things out. And I think this year is exciting because I think you're going to see a lot of that experimentation in a way that we haven't seen around here in 10, 11 years.
Well, you also see this in the league all the time where, you know, quote unquote, again, center, power forward, whatever, four or five, however you want to use that designation, like you mentioned, that on one end, they could, you know, Jaren could be playing the five, but on the other end, the defensive assignments completely change. So it really, mm-hmm. like you mentioned, it can be fluid. It could be a fluid thing for, especially, you know, lineup wise. And again, we don't know what Taylor Jenkins is going to do, but it's definitely interesting. The versatility is interesting. And that was my next question is what do you think he could actually be on the floor with Jonas at the same time, maybe Jonas and Jaren, but clearly that's something that you think he could probably do.
Well, I mean, it's not something I would necessarily predict that he'd be, you know, super great at.
Right.
That let's not take it too far. But it's definitely something that in certain situations I would just try.
Right.
And, you know, like I said, you have a really low, you got a really like low threshold this year. Like you're going to lose a lot of games. No one is expecting this team to make the playoffs. The Vegas over and under I saw was 27 and a half wins, which I might be tempted to even take the under. I think they're going to lose a bunch of games. People don't realize how hard it is even for extremely good point guards to be rookie point guards. That's just so hard to do. Look at how talented the rest of the West is. And you're going to play, you know, the majority of your games against the Western Conference. I mean, there's no easy touches. Even Phoenix has at least got some talents on their squad, albeit, you know, they're always a little iffy. But everybody else is better than the Grizzlies on paper. And Phoenix may be better than the Grizzlies on paper, to be honest, depending on how you look at it. So, man, this year, just experiment. Like, play. I'd absolutely try some lineups. Just see what it looks like. Maybe it's terrible. So what? Who cares? Like, you know, just try it and see. And Clark is the kind of player I think people are really going to enjoy watching, not only because of his athleticism and he can dunk everything, but he's kind of a potential to be a jack of all trades. You know, there's a lot of things, especially if he can consistently, you know, show that outside shot is a weapon. I'm not saying he's got to hit it, you know, take four or five threes a game and hit it at like a 40% clip. I mean, he's not going to be Steph Curry. But if he can at least make people think about it the way that Jaren had to make people think about it, well, then that opens up his ability to drive the basketball. And he showed he's got a decent handle. He's a little predictable on the drive right now. He hates to go to his right. It was nice to see him go to his right. There was a clip I threw in there of him going to the right. In college, I genuinely don't know that he ever went to his right. I don't know that it ever happened. And I watched pretty much every clip of him driving in college, and it was almost exactly the same every time. You know, he went to his left and spun back to his right. So that will have to change, but he did one time drive to his right in summer league. So maybe I'm sure the Grizzlies have picked up on that and are helping him in that regard. Man, this year just have fun. And I think people are, I hope at least people understand that the Grizzlies are not going to make the playoffs and that it really should be a time for experimentation.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, I say this all the time that, you know, learning how to win in the NBA is a very real thing. You see it all the time. And no matter how talented these young guys are, it still takes, you know, always takes some type of veteran presence. It takes learning how to win in this league, learning how to close out games. I saw it with the 76ers for sure, so many years, just learning how to win, even with the amount of talents on the floor. And so, yeah, you're right. They're going to lose a lot of games. They're still look, it's, you know, hopefully it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun while they're doing it, though. And I think that the Grizzlies have done a really, really good job of retooling this roster to where people are excited, even though they, I think they understand but they're going to lose games. I think you're right, though. People are going to, it's going to be hit them very hard when they're losing this many, this amount of games. They probably won't expect that. But either way, I think hopefully it'll be fun. Let's take a quick break. We'll come right back and talk more with Peter Edmondson of The Athletic. Welcome back to the show. Peter Edmondson of The Athletic joining me today, talking to him all about Brandon Clark. One thing I wanted to talk about, though, it's his, the idea that Brandon Clark, I guess, is maybe the future with Jaren Jackson Jr. You think that that's probably the idea long term as those guys will play together? And how does that affect Jonas? Does it make Jonas more expendable sooner rather than later? Or how do you think they approach that?
Yeah, I think so. I think it makes him more, I mean, expendable, I'm not so sure. But
tradable.
You just don't have, to me, a lot of concern about, you know, Jonas one way or the other as far as his long-term role with the team. It's a 3-year contract. It declines. So you're kind of expecting, you know, his value to the team to similarly decline, I think, over the course of that contract. I'm not really sure. I don't really know, if Brandon Clark specifically is the heir apparent or can jump in and play alongside Jaren. I mean, some of that depends on how much Jaren wants to play and how willing he is to try to play the five. You know, right now, right, I don't know that we have that answer. I know that the previous front office was not real excited about throwing him in at five a whole lot. This front office seems to be a little more analytically driven from what we have been able to kind of glean so far. I know, Zach Kleiman, obviously most of these decisions have been pretty analytically to whatever. I hate that term kind of, but I mean, just it's a catch-all, so you just kind of roll with it. Right. Most of the moves that we made have been pretty analytically friendly. And the analytically friendly thing to do is to think about Jaren as a five. That's the projection. So I would, if I had to just kind of make a logical guess, I would guess that they'd probably try to do that a little more this year. If Jaren's okay with that, but that will depend a lot on, or that'll have a big factor as to whether Brandon Clark can be that guy. I mean, you know, is Brandon Clark going to be, the question to me is he going to be able to be a impact starter on a regular basis, right, with the way he plays? You can definitely see him coming in and being a big time impact second team guy, maybe working with Tyus Jones, catching a bunch of lobs, you know, really changing the game defensively. You know, is he going to be able to diversify the skill set enough to be a long-term, you know, big-time starting presence? Some people I've seen already compare him to Draymond Green. You know, I wouldn't put that on him yet. Draymond is a lot longer, even if he's a little bit shorter in height. His wingspan is like 7'1". And right, Draymond is a much better passer at this point and can kind of facilitate in a way. Clark's not a bad passer, don't get me wrong, but he's not in Draymond's league at this stage. You know, that, so don't put that on him yet. But, you know, if he can, I'm not saying he may, look, man, the guy's smart and he's good, so who knows where he goes from here. Maybe he will become that. I'm just saying right now a lot of people are calling for him to start. He's going to come off the bench. I think he should come off the bench right now and then kind of see where it goes. And then as Jonas, you got 2 years left on that deal and then 1 year left. Jonas still, you know, solid player, imminently tradable contract. If you think he's ready to make the jump, then you can move Jonas and go on about your business.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting dynamic for sure. It's something that I think people are obviously talking about. There's not a whole lot to talk about right now, so that's what people do during the summer is just talk about anything and everything.
I mean, and the team is perfect for that, man. Like we talked about, I don't know. Like, it's the amount of Grizzly fans that are reading, I know just from our stuff, like, the numbers are crazy. Like, they've gone through the roof this summer, which is wild because, like, I wouldn't have thought, you know, it's like – yeah, I mean, it's been an exciting and interesting summer, but I wouldn't have thought that, like, it would, you know, like, an article on Tyus Jones would do huge numbers, but it, like, you know, Tyus Jones and Brandon Clark are bringing in, like, numbers, you know, at times as good or better than Mark and Mike stuff, You know, it's like, what? Like,
yeah,
I mean, people
it's
are ready.
Interesting. I think people just got, I think it's, you know, it was, you know, change is inevitable. And you get to a point where you just want to do something different. And I honestly,
yeah.
I think that's just where it got to. And I mean, it's the same thing with,
I agree.
With this show. Where do we, to be quite honest, our numbers are a lot better. Some of the shows now have more listens than we did during the season, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah,
guess,
oh, yeah.
You know,
I know, it's crazy,
I
right?
Think that starts with Ja Morant. You know, like, you don't do that. I don't think any of this matters. Like, I think we're in a very different place if you don't get Ja Morant. But still, like,
oh,
just
for sure.
all the moves that the front office have done, and that's also that has something to do with it. It's a breath of fresh air. It's refreshing to talk about all the good things the front office is doing instead of us, you and I, writing pieces and talking about how this is the dumbest move we've seen in a long time. Like, it is a very different – everything is different. And a breath of fresh air of having good, solid moves, you're like, wow, that's impressive. And then you dig down and you're like, oh, wow, there's some protections on that pick. Or even more impressive, you get in down to, like, the very minutiae of the deals, it gets even more impressive. So I think that goes along with it. Before I get you out of here, I want to ask you about Andre Iguodala. Where do you land on Iguodala, as far as just the trading is some buying him out, and obviously that everybody seems to talk about that. I outlined on the show. There's just not a whole lot of places for him to go. You already won the trade, but I wanted to get your thoughts on where you land on Andre Iguodala.
You see, I'm working on a piece to kind of go over some of that. Hopefully for next week, we'll see how it goes. But I mean, my thought on it, Mark, is. They already won the trade, as you pointed out. I think that's first and foremost. I mean, the biggest part of that trade was the first that you got from Golden State, and that could end up being a very good first when it's all said and done. It's just you're just gonna have to wait a while before it conveys. But I mean, that's okay. You need Golden State to start to suck a little bit before that thing's gonna be real good. So that's the real key to the whole thing. Iguodala is just you're taking on his contract. And I say that specifically because you're not taking on Andre Iguodala, really. Like,
right.
He's not a part of their – as a player, he's not part of their thought. He's not part of their future.
He may never come here. He may never even make it to Memphis.
I've said I don't think he's ever going to set foot in Memphis other than
right.
wearing somebody else's jersey. He may have to come for, like – if he's still, you know, on the roster, come media day, you know, opening a pre – he may have to come and just do a quick medical thing and a couple quick photos, but – yeah, I think that would be the extent of it, and they may excuse him from that altogether. He's not part of the team. So,
right.
You know, like, forget about him as a player. Now, I think the other aspect of this, Mark, is it's a very provincial thing. And as a Memphian, I can recognize this. Not everybody that covers the Grizzlies is a Memphian. No knock. I mean, that's not like a statement of
– right.
like superiority or anything like that. It's just like this. I think to kind of fully understand this, I think you need to be a Memphian to some extent. There is a longstanding inferiority complex that has been part of Memphis's DNA forever. It's why the grit and grind thing caught on. It's why, you know, no one believed in all that stuff. I mean, from the time that, you know, the XFL garbage to the new AAF
yeah.
nonsense to not getting the NFL team back in 1993 when Jacksonville got it to the thing with the Oilers, you know, screwing over Memphis in the way that they handle their transition to Nashville. There's all these things that make Memphis fans, and it's like, it's why we get, I'm sure you get it, and I certainly get it. Oh, we did all this, but we weren't on SportsCenter. We did all this, and they only showed 30
yeah.
seconds of it. Like, there's just this thing, and now this Iguodala thing is becoming a proxy for that. We can't let anybody roll over on us. We're Memphis. We got to prove that we're not going to take anything from anybody. And we hold on to Andre Iguodala, by God, until you get, like, a great pick. And that's just not what this is. That is not what you can think that if you want. That has nothing to do with where this trade is, the perception of this team around the league, any of that stuff. And so just dismiss all of that from your thought process if you can, because it has absolutely nothing to do with what they should do with Iguodala. There aren't that many dance partners out there that make any sense for Iguodala. Find the teams that have the willingness to take his money on, because the Grizzlies are going to want to save money in the deal. So they're going to send back some salary, maybe some bad salary with a young player, or maybe just some salary with a pick.
Sure.
The Rockets don't have picks to throw away, and they don't have salary that makes a lot of sense. The Clippers have a little bit of salary that makes sense. They don't seem to want to send it over, and the rest of the roster doesn't really make a lot of sense for that deal either. Now, who else is going to see Iguodala? The Mavericks? I mean, again, maybe, but that deal for Courtney Lee and like $5 million, and that's fine. I mean, if you do it, what, right. Is that going to be like a big win? Is that going to be some like slap, like, so we showed you, take that NBA, we got a second round pick and saved $5 million off the cap and got an extra little bit of cash. Great. Like, if they have to waive him, it doesn't mean Memphis is like a dumb or bad franchise or that they're being worked over by the NBA. It's sometimes you need to do right by the player's agent, and Iguodala has no control over this. He has no desire to be part of this whole thing. He didn't want to do it to begin with. He was only traded as a byproduct of a cash deal and a salary thing. If they explore all their options and they can't find anything that makes any sense for them, you know what? The buyout will save them, you know, likely $2, $3 million, whatever it is, whatever he's going to take. Now, if you want to take a buyout, then, you know, what can you do? You just got to, you can just sit there and suck it up. But if he wants to get out there and play, I think you owe it to them to try to explore that. And then guess what? That extra $2 or $3 million of space that you can then use one of your exceptions for potentially to take another contract into. How much space did you need to get Josh Jackson and DeAnthony Melton and the second round pick from Phoenix? About $3.5 million. So if you save that kind of money on a buyout, guess what? You could maybe do that again and call that part of the deal. So you can tell this just kind of rankles me, Mark, because I feel like people have like put a whole bunch of stuff on this that it just isn't there.
Yeah, it's definitely a weird dynamic. I mean, I've had conversations with people. It's like, well, how long do you really want to wait? Is
that worth it? And then you need a roster spot, by the way. Look at the roster spots, you know?
Yeah.
You need a roster spot. You've got like 18, 19 dudes right now.
Someone tells you right now, I'll give you 2 second-round picks for them. Do you take that over waiting to the deadline when they're, quite frankly, the deals are only going to get worse and worse and less because people who thought they were going to compete are going to be worse in February than they are right now. Everybody thinks they have a chance right now. In January, there's going to be half of those people, maybe a quarter of those people, who actually think they can be championship contenders. And so where's the line? Where's the line to where you have to say, okay, let's just do this and get it done? Like you mentioned, there's roster spots. And I think it's become this weird, like you mentioned, this weird, you can't have them without giving us a pick, or it's just so weird.
Like a power play dynamic thing, or it's like a day. Yes. I'm telling you, it's a power play. Like, look, you need the roster spot. I'm not saying you got to just say, oh, yes, absolutely, we'll buy him out. Yeah, whatever you need. Oh, yeah. Oh, well, no, we won't even buy him out. We'll just waive him, and he can have all the money. I'm not saying you got to do that. But at some point, it becomes the better thing to do just to say, you know what, this we'll do a little buyout here, you know, save a little bit of money, and then you can go out there and do your thing, and we can do our thing. We're obviously in two different places altogether when it comes to what you expect from this guy. So, let him go. You've already won the trade, and it's better to keep that roster spot open that you've got going into the season. Wouldn't you rather take a chance on player X? Like, you know, you had a spot open for Bruno Caboclo.
Sure.
So you signed, you know, early on last season, and now he's turned into something that maybe, you know, well, jury's still out, but I think he's decent enough that at least you think he could be part of an extended rotation. Well, you're the part of your development as a team where you need to take those chances. You need to have the roster spot available to take those chances, whether it be, you know, letting John Conchar do his thing, or Viuda, you know, really comes on and you want to sign him to, you know, a roster spot, then boom, you can convert that two-way because you've got that chance. If you're sitting there hanging on to Iguodala, hoping against hope for like a 28th pick as opposed to like, you know, 2 second-round picks or a second-round pick or whatever it is that you're getting, that to me is not a great use of your resources.
Yeah, and I know this is positioning from the Grizzlies that they want a first-round pick for Andre Iguodala, but you're not getting a first-round pick for a 35-year-old, $17 million Iguodala. It's just not happening.
You know what? I will say this though. I agree with you. I don't think it's going to happen. But I have no problem with them positioning right now.
Sure, not at all.
They should do whatever they. I mean, you know, through the summer, do whatever you want, man. Go even early in the season. You can take it all the way up to December 15th when the players that were newly signed players in free agency this off season can be traded. I mean, if you want to take it all the way up to there, I mean, that's fine. But at some point, it's going to become counterproductive. I can't say specifically when that point is, but at some point it will. And that's when you need to be willing to say, you know what, let's just take whatever the best offer is on the table right now, or let's just go ahead and do a buyout and be done with it. And I think, look, I'll just say this. I know you got to run. I'll just say, like, the front office at this point did they get fleeced on any of these other deals? I mean, have they gotten fleeced on any deal yet? I didn't think they were going to get potentially a 2022 first-round pick out of Utah in the Mike Conley deal. But they did. They protected that 2021 in a way that looks very likely. They'll either have a late lottery in 2021 or, you know, a 2022 pick that could be extremely good in what should be a very deep double draft. I didn't think they'd have it. I mean, I wrote about that they should go for that, but I didn't think they'd actually get it. People in Utah that I talked to didn't think they'd actually get it, but they got it. So I'm willing to give them a little leeway because thus far they've been pretty sharp in terms of the moves they've made.
Yeah, it's a weird situation altogether. There's a point and there's a line, like you mentioned, where it all becomes it becomes Chandler Parsons again, and that's just what we're talking about, and that's just, you know, it becomes a distraction.
Yeah.
And this, you know, I can mention
not
that.
Iguodala's not going to sit there and take that. I can't really blame him at this point in his career.
It's a lot of, you know, you get to where people, it's a 2K, it's a video game, it's just an asset, and it's a real, you know, these are real people. With lives,
exactly.
just like we you and I have, and so there's a point, and it's probably, like I said, it's probably in December, it's probably in January, or after, you know, I think because Bobby Marks tweeted this, 40% of the league's been traded or signed, like they can't be traded or signed again, so that limits you by a large margin of contracts that can be included in any kind of deal right now. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with Andre Iguodala. But like we mentioned, you've already won the trade. Whatever you do from here on out, it doesn't matter. It's all gravy. If you get a second round pick, perfect, great, have at it. It's fine. You save a little money on the cap, that's fine. It doesn't matter anymore. And I think that's what people fail to understand. And it's a weird dynamic where people, it's an asset and you have to pay up to get it. I don't know. It struck me as very strange altogether. But Peter, I appreciate you. You know, by the way, I forgot to ask you, am I able to call you Pete or is that still just an Amari thing?
That cracked me up. I did not realize he was going to put that on this. He calls me Pete, and like I told him, is what I said on publicly is absolutely true. Like, I generally advise people I want to be called Peter. but in the spirit of, like, you know, being a teammate and Omari, the way he says it, it's kind of like, yeah, I'm okay with it. It's fine. There are a couple of people that call me Pete. Basically, they're, like, grandfathered in on, you know, just kind of like, all right, that's fine. Like, I'll just let it go. And he's Omari has that, because I was like, yeah, we're working together. I'm trying to be a good teammate here. I'm not going to, like, you know, bust the guy's chops. But then he told me a bunch of people call him Omar. And he said, I hate it when people even think about doing that. So he said, I understand.
That seems strange.
Like, I just don't like, Pete is just different. Like, I mean, Pete Branica, you know, God bless him. He doesn't want to be Peter. He wants to be Pete. Okay.
Yeah.
I like to be Peter and not Pete. So, you know,
luckily no one can
short
my name
phrasing
to anything other than Mark. So that's all it can
Marcus?
Be.
Marcus?
I guess if
Marcus,
you call me, I guess, if people start calling me Marcus, I'm going to be furious. So
is Mark short for Marcus?
No, it's just Mark. That's it. So, but
it's
if
just
people,
Mark. That's what it is. All right.
People start calling me Marcus now because of you. Thanks. I will be furious. So don't do it.
Marcus King.
Anyway, man, Peter, I appreciate it. We'll do it again soon, man.
Absolutely, man. Anytime. I love the Locked On. Give my best to David and all the Locked On folks. You guys, it's fun to watch it grow, and man, I can't wait to see how it's going to continue to blow up, because it's the concept is awesome, and you're doing some great shows, and man, the network is really cool. So keep up the great work.
Yeah, it's been fun. It's going to be an even better season. Except it's going to be a lot of losses. It'll be fun. We will have fun while we're doing it, though.
That's right. Exactly right.